Drums, please. Hi, it's me, Ashkenazi, your favourite North London Jewish queen. I am here to bring to you the secrets from the Pink Room.
Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room, Pink Room, Pink Room, with Kenazi. Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room, Pink Room, Pink Room, not the Stink Room.
Hi, my bubblers, it's me, Ashkenazi, reminding you to keep doing those lateral flow tests. Welcome to the Pink Room, the queerest backstage since Grindr was invented. This week, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to Jodie Harsh, queer icon, DJ, promoter, and celebutante. I'd never actually interviewed a drag queen before, so I'm not sure I asked the right questions, and the internet was horrific. Amongst hearing about how she made her latest record, My House, we discussed
why we enjoyed being the odd one out,
what it was like as a drag queen prior to Drag Race, and queer acceptance in the music world. So, here it is. Jodie Harsh in the Pink Room with me, Ashkenazi.
Jodie, welcome to the Pink Room, the queer backstage area, one that I've been in many backstage areas and usually they're not filled with queens. How do you contend with being the one queen in a backstage area? Because I assume you're the one queen and have been for many years.
Yeah, but you know, I quite like that as well. Quite like being the odd one out in the crowd.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I know. I found a book recently, and I wanted to read to you your quote about drag because it really spoke to me. Drag is my escape and my prison, my work and my play, my joy and my pain, my buzz and my fatigue, my looks and my brains, my business and my pleasure, my laughter and my tears, my boy and my girl, and it hurts my fucking feet.
did I write that? That's actually a direct quote from Geoffrey Chaucer.
Oh, really?
No.
And then there's a really great picture of you and Detox. Can you tell me about that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I remember that. Okay, so that is the night when Detox first came to London and she came to host my party room service, that my club night that I was doing at the time. And I remember that was like, she'd just been on Drag Race. So we're going back quite a few years. And it was like absolute, we'd announced that Detox was hosting the party or performing or something. Like it was like the Queens hadn't started coming to do GAY, all that kind of stuff yet. I think prior to Detox coming, I'd had like maybe Willem or something, and that was kind of it. And so people were like in absolute hysterics and like losing their shit over the fact that like Detox from RuPaul's Drag Race was going to be in London in a party. And so it was like complete madness. And I think that picture was outside her hotel. I'd gone and picked her up and taken her to the party. She's my friend. I love her.
Yeah, she's an icon. I found this book in like a charity store and I was like, oh, grab that.
Yeah. In a charity shop?
Yeah. I've been charity shopping again, girl, like finally.
How much was the book?
It was £2.
Oh, that's quite expensive, actually.
I know, it wasn't in the bargain bin, thank God.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, so like, I've never had to tour in drag. I'm sure you've done like touring in drag. What's the most important item that you have to have if you're going to be a drag queen on tour?
Your passport. And trust me, there's been so many times I've been like, bring my passport with me. The passport is a good start.
That's a good start.
Yeah. What else? What's like a clever drag thing? Like, oh, I'll tell you a funny story. Oh, face powder. Tell you a really funny story. Actually, it's not that funny, but it's funny for me. So I got to the Life Ball in Vienna, which is this amazing big like charity gala. You might have seen it. It's like super famous. You've got Amanda Lepore there and all these famous people there. And there's like this huge red carpet in Vienna and we're raising millions and millions and millions of euros for AIDS. And basically I got to the hotel and I was like, oh my God, I don't have any faith. No, I got to the airport on the way there at Heathrow or something. I was like, fuck, I don't have any face powder. I've run out. I picked some up. So I went to MAC and I bought some face powder. Got to the hotel in Vienna, started getting ready, huge rush. And as I was patting the face powder on, you know, after my foundation, I was thinking, it feels a bit dry and crispy. Anyway, it turns out it's that face powder with that like shine in it.
Right.
And so I looked sort of a bit, I looked a little bit crinkly. I was a bit like, oh, I don't know. And then I got in the lift to go downstairs to the lobby, like with my friends. And I was with Daniel Lismore. And I took a selfie with the flash. And I was like, my whole face was like white, patchy, like glowy bits and blobs and stuff. It was so bad. And I was almost in tears. I was so stressed out. And I went back upstairs. And I got someone else's face powder and tried to like top it all up. And basically, every picture of me from that night that just looks like blotchy, horrible, horror. I look like a cow, like patchy. Like it was really bad. Like shiny bits and then map it. Oh, honestly, it was a really, really bad. So I would say that the thing that Queen should bring on tour is like your makeup. Your tried and trusted, yeah, things that you would normally use from home. Like don't be grabbing stuff from the local makeup shop. Don't expect to be just grabbing stuff on the road. Like bring everything with you that you need, basically, to answer your question. But just because like things can go wrong. Bring your trusted kit.
Absolutely. I think the more I've done this podcast, the more I've just realized that you just have to bring everything.
Bring everything. It's not easy, but such is life.
No, true.
Check two suitcases in so you can bring everything. Well,
fair enough. Easy. What got you like started in drag?
I don't know. I just moved to London and I just thought I was hanging out at clubs like Heaven and stuff, and like they were just, I just saw drag queens and I thought that looks so fab. I've always wanted to be the odd one out. I've always wanted to be the one that stands out in the room. I've always been a bit left of center and a bit sort of like when I was a kid, I always felt really, really different. But I've also like enjoyed and embraced that. Like I've never felt like I'm really different and that's a bad thing. Like I've always felt like I'm a bit of a freak and I'm cool with that. And so when I was going to gay clubs, I mean, 15, 16 years old or whatever, and I started seeing drag queens, I just thought, oh my God, they are like aliens in this room of like, everyone else looks so basic compared to these few people who are like, you know, hosting a party or performing or hanging out, drinking on a night out or whatever. And I just thought, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. I want to try that. I want to like dress up and be the person in the room that stands out more than anyone else. And so that's really what first attracted me to it, I think.
Yeah, I totally can feel that. Where did you get the understanding from? Because I'm a product of RuPaul's Drag Race to an extent.
Yeah, I'm obviously around before it. I mean, before I came along, there weren't really people actively out and about doing what I was doing, like fashion parties and hanging out with famous people and wearing like designer clothes in drag. Like it wasn't really, it kind of wasn't really that from my generation, right? From people my age. And I kind of feel like I got my inspiration more from like fashion and stuff really rather than culturally as well. Not just like from like the looks I was doing, but just, I just sort of saw it as a chance to play dress up and kind of fuck with what society perceives as like normal and acceptable to be like in public. I kind of took a bit of a punk rock approach to it and kind of thought, you know, let's do crazy outfits, let's be a drag queen, that's so weird and whatever. It wasn't like obviously there was no Drag Race when I first came along, so it wasn't a dumb thing. Like drag wasn't a thing that you would like, you'd come to London and try drag once. No, they were like the freaks in the club that people would love, but yeah. And I guess I kind of took it and made it a little cooler because I'm not saying I made drag cool because there were so many amazing people before me, but in that moment in my corner of Clubland, like I suddenly became this kind of like the person that was out every night and wearing the, you know, the crazy clothes and all that kind of stuff. And I just started sort of getting involved in parties, like doing the door, dancing on the bar, hosting, like bringing friends down and that kind of stuff. And really kind of just started my journey there in nightlife.
Yeah, it's something that I feel is like missing now is So we've got Sync the Pink, and we've still got some like really strong nightlife with drag queens, but
it's not necessarily so much like an underground queer culture anymore because it's on mainstream TV. So you're going to get a much broader audience. And I don't know that that's such a bad thing, you know, in the great scheme of things, because the fact that we've got drag queens on the BBC or drag queens on VH1 or whatever, and huge straight followings, I mean, I don't think that's such a bad thing when in certain countries in the world you can still get beheaded for being gay. Or, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, people were being outed on the front cover of newspapers for being a perv. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I kind of just think it's magnificent that we can, that drag is so accepted now by mainstream culture. But I do totally get what you mean. Like that, like the drag in Drag Race may not resonate with you. You may take a more punk stance approach to it, or a more queer approach to it and stuff. But, and you can find those, you mentioned Sing the Pink, but you can find those corners still that haven't been like bastardized by commercialization. But I think there's room for everything. And I think it's amazing how massive drag has become. I think it's great.
I've been a part of the indie scene for a very long time, and it's a scene that hasn't had drag, and I think has had issues with its acceptance of certain queer figures. And then I read a lot about Kelly Okereke, who I don't know if you know him or worked with him, but he always said how the indie scene never accepted his queerness and his blackness, whereas the electronic scene was very open arms and accepting. And I was just interested to know your experience of being a drag queen in the DJ world, how people responded to it,
generally. Because also, if you don't know that the dance music world stems from queer and black and Latin origin, then you're a bit of a moron if you don't know that. So it is obviously part of the history and the roots. So if people to be like homophobic or whatever phobic within dance culture, and dance culture is all about and electronic music is really all about love, you know, it's all and togetherness and stuff. So if you don't fuck with that, then you're just a bit of a cunt, really, aren't you? But wait, what was the question? Because I had a really good answer and it's just slipped my mind.
Oh, your experience of being in the electronic music scene. Yeah.
Yes. I think that now I'm more, more doors are open now than may have been previously, even just a couple of years ago. But then that's also because of the music that I make, not because of the fact that I'm just in a wig, you know. But generally pretty accepting. Yeah, for sure. I haven't experienced any real negativity towards me. No.
Cause I've certainly had, I play drums in drag, and I've certainly had people say, especially, you know, your straight blokes who are kind of into guitar music say, why do you feel the need to put on all this as part of your performance? And
They just sound like twats.
No, well, that's true. but let's talk about the music.
Some people just don't get it, you know, and that's fine.
Horses for courses.
You do, girl.
I'll do me anytime, honey. Let's talk about some music then. How did My House come together?
So I was in the studio playing about, and I took a little sample for the Mary Jane Girls, sped it up, replayed it, and added some extra stuff in, and that's it. Made a banger.
It is a total banger. And I'm so happy for you that, like, the success of that song. But I've been listening to the back catalogue, honey, and I've been enjoying it massively. What are some of your favourite tunes from your, like, less discovered tracks? Tuesday's my favourite.
Oh, Yeah, Tuesday is good. I like Tuesday because it was sort of my first track from this sort of like new era, like of like right. putting out music myself. And I made Tuesday with Sophie, who was a friend of mine who obviously passed away this year. So that's got good memories of us writing the track together. What else do I like? I kind of hate everything I've ever done like, once it's come out. That's like, such a creative thing, isn't it? I don't actually hate it all. Obviously I like it. But I'm always thinking of what the next thing is. I don't hate my music. I love everything that I've done, otherwise I wouldn't put it out. But I'm always like thinking like, what have I got next? Rather than like, let's think about something I released 2 years ago. Because it's out there then. That's then for other people to enjoy, I always think. Like then it's like everyone else's. I don't really own it anymore. I kind of feel like I'm more excited about like the stuff that's coming up next. That's what gets me. Like, but what do I like? I don't know. Don't Try Me is really good. Vuvuzela. That's kind of really bitchy and fun. It's like a bitchy house anthem. And that's it.
As like someone who makes music as well, that experience of listening to your track like hundreds of times over and over and over, it doesn't become enjoyable to listen to anymore. I've made 3 records and I can't listen to them back.
They come out or when they're out?
Once they're out, once I've mastered it, I can't listen to it again. It's just too much.
Yeah. I totally get that. I think a lot of musicians are like that.
Yeah.
My house is like on like quite heavy rotation on the radio at the moment. And so I have Radio 1 on it all day at home on my Alexa. And when my house comes on, I'm like, a bit like, oh my God, gag, it's me on Radio 1. That's so cool. But I've also been like, fuck your record again. Just because I've heard it like for like 6 months before anyone else heard it. So I'm like, I've rinsed that track.
Have you ever sat there and gone, oh, this track's good? And then you've gone, oh shit, it's me.
Oh, in the gym, they were the other day, they were playing something. I was a bit like, this beat is something that I would make. And then when some like synths came in and then a bit of a vocal, I was a bit like, oh no, this is my track. It was Paris, this thing where I sampled Paris is Burning on on an EP last year. Yeah, that came on in the gym, and like for the first like, I don't know, the first like 16 bars, I was a bit like, oh. And then I was like, oh no, it's me.
What kind of software do you use now? Because Ableton. Ableton, mm-hmm. I've used to be a Logic queen, and now
I'm... Ableton is the best to use.
Yeah. I love it. I was always like a right-to-left girl, and now when I'm up...
Yeah, you have to do the other way, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's changed my whole understanding of like how to make music and how to structure it as well. It's kind of crazy.
I've always used Ableton, so that's just where I put me around Logic on my way
more. Yeah. And sampling's a big thing that you use. I'm frustrated at myself that I spent so long being like, oh no, I could never sample. That's something I wouldn't do because I was a drummer and I liked live music.
Yeah.
I love
sampling stuff because you can kind of take some sound and kind of give it a new life or like a track that you really love or an idea that you really love. And you can kind of like, no, it's not stealing. It's not even really borrowing. It's like, I feel like it's sort of giving something a new life. And it's also like, it's also great to present it to like new sets of ears who never would have heard that music before. And it's like, as long as you do it in a sort of a clever way, some of my sampling has been quite obvious. Like I've sampled, you know, vocals and stuff that's been like quite straight up, like re-editing, but essentially, I've definitely done like, loads of it's really fun to play about with samples that are a little bit more discreet as well, and everyone does it.
Everyone does it.
Some of the biggest records of all time is like when you go on whosample.com, you're like, oh my god, I was looking the other day on George Michael, Too Funky. It samples about 6 different records. You know that?
That's crazy.
Samples like loads and loads. It has like an Aretha Franklin record and a so-and-so record and a so-and-so record. And so loads of samples in it. How mad is that?
It's totally mad. Yeah, finding out who sampled what for what song is always crazy. So there's some
whosample.com is the best website ever. It's amazing.
Yeah. I love it. The one like Kanye's a dick, but he does really like nail sampling for me.
Most clever music producer in the sort of hip-hop R&B world. Kanye West. Oh my God, it's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm a big Yeezus fan, or was, but he's gone doolally.
He's had Lily Allen now. Huh? Oh, that's Jesus. Yeah, I don't think he's... I don't know Kanye.
I wanted to find out your strangest drag queen encounter with another drag queen or celebutante or...
I walked in on one of the... Let me just tell you. Hold on. Let me tell you a season.
We're redacting names again.
Yeah. I'm not a grass.
I've done so much redacting in this podcast.
I once walked... on a season 6 queen having a threesome backstage at a gig. I don't know if that's even that rock and roll, is it?
I guess so. Is a threesome's rock and roll still?
I don't know, I've had two today. No.
Drag threesomes are quite rock and roll, I guess.
No, not that, not really. I'm totally unshockable, though. I'm like, just sucking two dicks at the same time. It was like hardly groundbreaking.
What in the last like few years has shocked you? There must be something, girl.
Coronavirus?
That's pretty shocking.
Pretty fucked, right?
Yeah. Have you been okay? Have you survived? Yeah,
I had COVID like way near the beginning. And I had my first AstraZeneca shot a couple of weeks ago.
And you were okay.
Yeah. Well, I had like 2 days of like flu like symptoms after. I was pretty ill.
So I got through coronavirus by watching back Celebrity Big Brother series, and my favorite series does happen to be the one with Jodie Marsh in it, purely because
Pete Burns as well, right?
Yeah. Were you friends with Pete? Did you How is he's having watched that Big Brother series? He's an icon to me now, but what was he like in person, as fabulous as he seems?
Yeah, I think Pete was always sort of like, you know, that what you see is what you get.
Yeah. And have you ever met Jodie Marsh?
Oh, like years ago, yeah.
My favorite Pete quote is, I'd like to rip her head off and shit on her neck stump.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
How do you get through night after night of drag? And what are you doing tonight? What are you dressed in?
Tonight I'm DJing... like a store launch type thing. It should be quite fab. I guess this is amazing. Should be good. Yeah.
Draws.
A store launch, like a shop, like an event in like open a big sort of like department store thing.
Oh, nice. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
All sat down and like tabled as usual.
I don't know. I'd imagine so. I really don't know. This is the first time I've been to like a live event since COVID.
Are you excited for it? You excited for it?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited to get back in the world. I need that to happen. My favorite video that you're in is when you appear from a house in Camden with cups of tea and biscuits for press outside with none other than Amy Winehouse. How was that? Do you remember that moment? And
I don't remember that moment.
You don't remember that moment?
No, I'm joking. I do.
sad day when she passed away, but I want to know the moment when you were on tour or you were traveling and you thought, this is my last moment on earth, because I for certain have come, like while on tour in America or in another country, I've just been sat there going, I don't think I'm going to last much longer.
I had the worst turbulence I've ever experienced on a plane ride from New York to London once, and I did think that I was about to die. I did think I was about to be in a plane crash. Like the most extreme, like I don't know how that plane stayed in the sky. Like it was beyond rough. It was like the plane was nearly being flipped upside down type thing. So I did think I was going to die in that moment.
Jesus. And you were in full drag.
What, on a plane?
Have you ever had to go?
Loads. I've done, yeah, but I've been on a few private jets, obviously, you know, in drag. And why not? And also, I did a thing with Virgin Atlantic a couple of years, like a event thing that we did on a, that we flew from London to New York and threw a party in the air. And that was quite fun. Wow.
Who else was on the plane?
Like influencers and some celebrities. And I think you could like buy tickets as well for it and stuff. So they were like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, that was super fun.
And then what's been the gig that you've done that you were most pleased with or that was visually the most like spectacular?
I played Wembley Stadium opening for the Spice Girls. That was kind of mage.
Stop it. When was that?
So when they did their shows like two years ago.
Okay, so I was there on the final.
The last. Yeah, that's when I did.
Oh my God, no way.
You obviously got there too late. And left
obviously, go. But I was friends with Mel B at the time and we were sitting backstage at her in her like room with the red and white blue flag sofas and she'd ordered plate after plate of cheese and ham toasties.
I love Mel B.
Yeah, she's amazing. Those shows were amazing as well.
Yeah, good, right? What a fucking wicked show. I love
that. I know. And I was like, then I went and saw Ariana the next week or something. And I was like, oh, this doesn't match up to the Spice Girls. Just the complete vibe and it just felt really significant being there as well. Just because like I'd been that kid that 6 years old with their tour tape. Just being like, I want to do that.
Yeah, amazing show. I hope they tour again. I love the Spice Girls, obviously.
Yeah, I hope so too. So what have you got coming up in this post-COVID excitement? You've just done My House.
Yeah, loads of music. Getting the next track ready now. In the process of not even finishing it, but I'm not halfway through making that. What else? Just loads of DJing, loads of touring as soon as I possibly can. But for sure, around the country, there's loads of like gigs and stuff like around this country. Because before I've kind of focused more on like America and Europe and all that kind of stuff. But I think because we can't travel now for sure this year, I think I'll be like touring around the world. So it's going to be really cool just to go around the UK and like do loads of local, all the places that, you know, obviously I've done the Manchesters and the Birminghams and the Leeds and stuff. But it'd be great to go to like smaller towns and stuff and just really just like play the UK. I think will be awesome.
No, absolutely.
Because I'm from here.
And what's your favourite city to play in the UK?
London, home.
London. I for indie gigs, I hate playing in London. The further north I go, the happier I get in like terms of like the response.
Really?
Yeah.
And I love London.
So when you moved to London, where did you move from originally?
From Kent, Canterbury.
Canterbury, yeah. And you've been in London ever since, basically.
Yeah.
What's your favourite London venue?
Favourite London venue? I love Coco, that's fab. I mean, I have DJed at Coco years ago. But I love Coco,
it's cool. It is gorgeous. Do you think it'd be open?
Yeah, some of the best venues some of the best venues are just like not there anymore.
I know. There are some really exciting new ones though. There's that laptop in Crystal Palace. You ever been there?
No, amazing.
Okay, so it's called the Rusty Laptop. It's like two.
Oh, I love that. That's like, a great number.
And it's sat behind a lake. And it's been like disused for years. And over the pandemic, they've managed to get a bunch of stuff sorted on it so they can use it. So I'm excited for like the venues that are going to open as a result of the pandemic. Like this year has been absolutely savage, but I feel like there is just like, I feel a sense of excitement. Was there anything else that you wanted to like plug or?
Let me think. No, just stream the music. Stream My House.
Yeah, going to stream it. Over and over again.
Yeah, give me those streams. Give me those streams.
Yeah, they're coming up. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. That was super fun. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on.
And so the curtain falls on another Pink Room. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed yourself. Tune in next week where I will be inviting my extra special friend, North London brother, hero in the indie world, the one and only Max Bloom. And remember, Queens, what happens on tour definitely gets shared in the pink room.